I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A new novel provides a view onto life under apartheid in South Africa. Hum, if you don't know the words. It is written by the author Bianca Murray, who joins me now. It is her first novel, and it's getting good notices. The book sees a 10-year-old white girl named Robin living with her parents in 1970s Johannesburg. They are killed, and Robin is raised by an aunt who hires Beauty, a black woman from a rural village, to care for her. Amidst the Soweto uprising, Beauty's own daughter goes missing. I'll get Ms. Murray to tell us how much of the book she'd like about these characters, the situations they encounter, and the themes explored. Bianca Murray studied creative writing at the University of Toronto's SCS. Her work has been published in World Enough and Crime. She is originally from South Africa, but lives in Toronto, where she joins me from today. The website for more is at biancamurray.com. This book is published by Putnam. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Bianca Murray. Ms. Murray, good morning.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Oh, thanks for joining us. So this is your first novel, and I'm curious to know how you got into writing. Was this something that you wanted to do, say, at an early age?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I wrote my first book when I was six. I illustrated it as well. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, I found it in my cousin's toy box ripped apart, so I learned early on that everyone's a critic. And, yeah, I've just been writing my whole life. So this is the first novel that I've had published, but not the first novel that I've written. The first two were widely rejected by everyone. So it's amazing to finally have this one published.
And it's getting good notices, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gotten some amazing reviews. I've got blurbs from phenomenal authors. It's been surreal. It's been wonderful.
So you're originally from South Africa. How did you end up in Toronto?
Well, we arrived in 2012, but my husband and I decided a few years earlier that we absolutely loved traveling, and to do it from South Africa was so tough because the South African currency is very weak, and everywhere you want to go is a two-day journey. Mm-hmm. So we said, well, let's go and live in North America for a while, and we decided on Toronto because that's where my husband could get work. He's in banking. And even though we didn't know anyone in Canada and we didn't know anyone in Toronto and we'd never been, we put in our permanent resident application and a quick 4 years later it was approved. And we arrived in Toronto in 2012 with four pets, four suitcases, and that's about it. And it's just been absolutely amazing. We didn't realize how much we would love it. We thought we'd maybe stay for a while and then move on, but we've made Toronto home.
And you'll get to do a lot of traveling on this book tour. I understand that it's about to start this week. Is that right?
Yeah, it starts tomorrow, and it's 12 U.S. cities in 12 days. And I managed to do a pre-publication tour as well in March. There was five cities in 5 days, so it's just absolutely amazing. I'm combining my two passions, which is traveling and writing.
Yeah, and to get to talk about your book with the people that you will over the next several weeks and as you have on your earlier travels, the response from people has been good, hasn't it? I mean, people are interested in this part of the world and interested in the characters that you've created.
Yeah, that's been the really rewarding part, because in trying to get the book published, we were rejected about 100 times. And a lot of the editors came back and said they don't think, you know, people in North America would be very interested in this. And yet the feedback has just been phenomenal. Most readers say that they were aware of apartheid, but they weren't, you know, they were too young or they mm-hmm. weren't quite sure what was going on. And they've said that they found it very, very fascinating. And I think it helps with Trevor Noah, whose book recently came out, Born a Crime. His nonfiction work inspired people to learn more about South Africa, and they said they really like the fictional account I'm giving them in conjunction with Trevor's book as well.
Yeah, so what's life for 10-year-old white Robin in the 1970s? I mean, what does she know of what's going on around her, especially of apartheid?
Right, so Robin is very much a product of her environment, as all children are. You know, she's been raised in a society where there's a lot of systemic racism, and so she thinks this is normal because she sees all the adults in her life behaving in this racist way, and all the black people in her life have been treated badly, and she doesn't see them objecting because she doesn't realize that they can't object because the laws are so against them. So she thinks this is completely normal. So she's privileged, and she's quite bratty, and she just thinks the world sort of revolves around her. And then obviously with the death of her parents, This is a huge shock to her system. She has a lot of grief that she has to cope with. And then as well, I think what's great for Robin is that she sent away to her aunt who lives in Yeovil in Johannesburg, which is a much more cosmopolitan area than where she was growing up in a mining community, mm-hmm. which was a very Afrikaans area and very close-minded. And suddenly she's in an area with people who are more open and more diverse, and this broadens her experience of the world.
And is that easier for her because she's 10? To get used to that, if you will, or to have her mind changed about certain things?
Definitely, because, you know, children aren't born racist, and yet they become raised racist. And I think there's a certain point beyond which you can't change that mindset, or if you can, it's very difficult to do. Whereas 10 is quite an impressionable age. You know, she's a product of her environment, but she's young enough that she's able to see things and decide for herself and realize that the way she's been raised and everything she's been told is not necessarily true. So she has a very naive sort of outlook on things, but it's also like a sponge absorbing everything she's learning.
One of the things I read about the book was one great review about how you depict this young girl and the experiences she has as an adolescent. And so when you're writing a book like this and you're creating the 10-year-old and how she feels, how she reacts to things and that which is happening around her, was that fun?
Yeah, it really, in some aspects, it was really fun because it gives you this carte blanche of the character to go places an adult character wouldn't go. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's quite challenging because I don't have children. So it's not like I'm around children a lot of the time. I've got nieces and nephews and godchildren who helped shape a lot of my understanding of the viewpoints of the world. And in some aspects, it was quite difficult because it required me to go back to that period in my life as a child and confront my own view of the world and my own prejudices and my own privilege, you know, and hold a mirror up to myself and look at how I was raised, who I was. So there were fun parts, but there were also quite difficult parts in that as well.
And so you depict Robin amidst a great trauma. And deep subject matter, and so, I guess when you're writing her in that, amidst all that, do you think it's easier for us as adults who read this to understand, say, the bad stuff that happens in a society?
I think that as adults, you're much more sympathetic to this character because you realize as an adult that she is a product of her society, and so you're much more compassionate towards her. And you're able to see how much she struggles because she's not only at that age struggling for identity, she's going through grief, she's lost her parents, she's been thrust into a world with an aunt who does not seem like she wants her and is ill-equipped to raise her, which is why very much she latches on to beauty because she's so desperate for a maternal figure, someone to love as well.
And so when she latches on to beauty, what's the nature of the relationship?
Well, in the beginning, it isn't, you know, it's not a great relationship because Robin thinks that she can treat the black people in her life condescendingly and she thinks she can talk down to them. And the character of Beauty, even though she comes to work for Robin's aunt to take care of Robin, she isn't in any way a maid. She qualified as a teacher before the apartheid laws changed and stopped black women from getting tertiary educations. So she's a very well-educated woman who lived in the Bantu homeland of the Transkei, very independently of what was happening in apartheid South Africa. And so she doesn't take Robin's nonsense. You know, she is not going to be talked down to. She's not going to be treated like a maid. And she very much shapes Robin's view of the world from then on.
And Beauty's dealing with her own problems, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Her activist daughter has gone missing in Soweto on the day of the uprising, which is huge concern for her because after the Soweto uprising, the South African security police was pretty much hunting the activists, and they were hunting members of Umkhonto we Sizwe, which Nelson Mandela started as the military wing of the ANC. So it was a very, very dangerous time in South Africa's history to be an activist. And so Beauty is really worried for her daughter. And even though Beauty obviously hates apartheid, and even though she wants to see the end of it, she's of an older generation, the same sort of generation as Desmond Tutu, who believed in passive resistance, you know, who believed in rising above it and that the tide would eventually turn, whereas her daughter is of the youth who believes that the only way apartheid is going to end is if the youth fights back. So there's this generational divide there as well.
And then you depict that, and when we think of South Africa today, you're probably an ideal person to ask about this because you come from there and you have been there recently. What do people in South Africa know of their history? I mean, people like who are growing up now probably, you know, didn't live in that era, and so is it taught to them at all?
Well, it's very different now because when I was in school, you know, it's to what they say, history is written by the winners or those who are perceived to be the winners. So when I was in school, our history books were very, very different. But children today know about South Africa's history. They are taught about apartheid. There are apartheid museums. There's the Hector Peterson Museum in Soweto. He was one of the very first children to be shot and killed on the day of the Soweto uprising. So they have very much grown up with an understanding of the atrocities of apartheid. And there's this whole generation of South African black children, well, not even children, they're adults now, that are called born frees because they were born after 1994, after the end of apartheid, and they've grown up in a very different environment. But even though apartheid ended, you know, you can see it with the civil rights movement. The scars of the past take a very long time to heal. And South Africa is still dealing with a lot of those effects now.
This may seem like a trite question, and I apologize, but I mean, is South Africa less racist today?
It's difficult to say because the laws are in place that you cannot be openly racist without, you know, being called to task for it.
Yeah.
But there are huge segments of South African society that are still very racist. And unfortunately, the current government, you know, after Nelson Mandela, he was absolutely amazing, and there was so much hope in the country. It was called the Rainbow Nation. Investment flooded in. Sanctions were lifted. There was so much hope and opportunity. And the current president and the current government is very much out for themselves. And unfortunately, this has resulted in a lot of poverty in South Africa. And when there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of crime. And violent crime as well, which then breeds that cycle of us and them and hatred towards the other. So I think there's huge sectors of South African society that have grown and have evolved and are very much trying to understand their own privilege and who are tackling that. But in the same way as in the US, you get people who are very racist and very closed societies, and those views haven't changed.
I guess it takes a long time, even though the structure is gone and it's illegal. The systemic racism is still endemic in a society, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, South Africa put a lot of laws, well, systems in place to try and do away with all the years of apartheid. So there were hiring practices called affirmative action, whereby to get certain positions, they would only hire from the black community, which then caused a lot of outrage in the white community because this is why so many people didn't want to give up apartheid, because they knew, white people knew that they were the minority, and that there was this huge majority who, once apartheid ended, could take away their jobs and take away their livelihoods. And those are the kinds of things that do breed a lot of mistrust and hatred down the line.
What concerns did you have in terms of writing this book and getting and publishing it as it is now? Because for a lot of readers, this will be, say, their first experience or their introduction to apartheid and life in South Africa in the 1970s. Was there a concern, say, to get it right in terms of the depiction?
Yeah, absolutely. Firstly, writing Beauty's character, because the story is told from the two narratives, and I I was very reluctant at first to write from Beauty's perspective because she was this black woman and I knew too well that this was not a voice that was mine. This was not an experience that was mine and I absolutely did not want to appropriate that experience. So I was very reluctant to write from Beauty's perspective in the beginning and it just became clear to me that the book would not be balanced without Beauty's voice, and her voice just really wanted to be heard. So I had to do a lot of research. I had to consult a lot of cultural experts. I consulted sensitivity readers to try and get that right. So that was always a concern of mine. But as well, you know, for this book is going to make a lot of South Africans uncomfortable because it means they have to look back on their own history. And they themselves have got to confront their own prejudices and their own racism in the same way I had to confront mine while writing this book, because there's a lot of my history. I benefited greatly from the oppression of others. My whole life has been about benefiting from the oppression of others, and it's an uncomfortable truth to have to admit to yourself. And a lot of South Africans will have to do that in reading this book. So I'm not sure how that will be received.
And do you have plans to take the book to South Africa?
Well, it's being published by Penguin Random House internationally, so mm-hmm. there will be copies available in South Africa, and obviously with Kindle, people are downloading it. I've had wonderful support from my friends and my family who've all bought the book and are embracing it and can't wait to read it. But in terms of a wider audience, South Africa, their book industry is like 95% non-fiction. So very few books that are published in South Africa are fiction. So I'm really not quite sure how much of the book will be available in South Africa.
Well, when you talked about writing the book and having to look at your own life, does that change what you think in terms of, let's say, your memory of certain things? I mean, as you write a book like this?
Yeah, because I look back on my childhood and I think it was this idyllic, lovely, wonderful childhood because I had this maid in my life, you know, besides having a wonderful family, my parents and my brother, I had this maid in my life who to me was just like another mother. She was an extension of our family and she helped me with my homework and she helped me prepare for ballet recitals and school plays. And the whole time I was growing up, I would say to her, well, come to the play so you can watch me in it. And she would say, no, I can't, or I'm busy, or I'm, you know, she never used to say I'm not allowed by law to sit in the same auditorium as white people. So very much like your perception of the whole thing changes and you realize that this idyllic childhood was at the expense of someone who was forced to leave her own five children in her homeland so that she could come to Johannesburg to work for my family. And she only saw them once a year, and it makes you question your own memories of your past compared to what she was experiencing at the same time.
And so what does writing fiction do for whatever feelings you have inside and sort of reconciling those? I mean, is there something, is it easier writing fiction perhaps, or is it more difficult writing fiction than say if you had to write a memoir?
Yeah, I think writing fiction is much easier than a memoir because, you know, memories are so tricky and your perception is so tricky. And also, your story is one thing and other people's experience and story is something else, you know. So for me to write a memoir would be almost in a way telling other people's story in my family who I wouldn't feel comfortable telling their story or my perception of it. And also writing fiction allowed me to put myself in the shoes of a character like Beauty, which you would never be able to do if you were writing a memoir. And to me, it was writing Beauty more than writing Robin that helped my journey of understanding that the tragedy of apartheid wasn't the many ways in which it prevented Eunice and I from sharing in each other's lives. The tragedy was that I was in her life at all.
Well, when we started the conversation, talk about how you ended up in Toronto. Do you miss living in South Africa at all?
I miss the people of South Africa, absolutely. The South Africans are amazing, warm, generous people across all cultures. I volunteered in Soweto with HIV/AIDS orphans and their caregivers for 10 years. It was a part of my weekly routine. I would go into Soweto and I had a wonderful support system and a wonderful family and friends, and all of that I miss. And there's, you know, obviously things about South Africa that'll always be in my blood, but I go back every second year or whenever I can, and, you know, and that's wonderful. But we wanted an adventure in Toronto, and we've definitely got that, and the people of Toronto have really embraced us and have welcomed us so much that it makes it easier to not miss home, you know? Yeah. I actually refer to Toronto now as home. I don't consider South Africa home so much.
Yeah. What plans have you got for future writing? I mean, are you working on something now? I know this is a terrible question to ask as you're commencing a book tour, but I mean, is there something down the line that you're putting out?
No, it's a great question. So I've been actually working on the sequel to Hum, mm-hmm. if you don't know the words, and because this book ends at a place where the story can definitely continue. But I've put that aside for a while because obviously the viability of publishing that will very much depend on the success of the first book. Mm-hmm. So I've put that aside and I've started something else that's also based in South Africa, but that is that book starts post-apartheid, on the day Nelson Mandela becomes president, because there are so many themes about that I would like to explore. The AIDS pandemic, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That's also a very interesting time in South Africa's history that I'd very much like to explore.
These characters, Robin and Beauty especially, these are characters that have stayed with you, haven't they, and that you think about still.
Oh yeah, they are such a part of me. It's amazing. Just writing them has brought me back to myself in a way that I don't think I would have gotten to ever if I hadn't spent time with these characters.
Yeah, and the richness of them. I mean, that's probably not just your imagination or your creativity that's cultivated them. They must have come from someplace deeper, did they?
Yeah, writing is such a weird, magical thing. These voices come to you as like imaginary friends. But like I say, I was reluctant to write Beauty in the beginning, but her voice was so strong. She just kept wanting to say things, and the more I suppressed her, the more she just wanted to be heard. And that's the same for so many characters in the book. There's a lot of secondary characters in the book. There's a lot of humor in the book as well. I don't want people to think this mm-hmm. is all doom and gloom and depression. There's a lot of humor in the book because South Africans themselves love to laugh. They're humorous people. They can see the best in a bad situation. So there are all kinds of characters that just came at me. I had to research Judaism, which I didn't know much about. There's a parrot called Elvis, and I didn't know anything about parrots, so I had to research that. So, yeah, who knows where these voices come from your subconscious, but it's fascinating.
Bianca, I'm very much looking forward to reading your book, and it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. Congratulations on it, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much, Joe. I really, really appreciate it, and thanks for having me on your show.
You're very welcome. The book is called Hum, If You Don't Know the Words. It's published by Putnam. Its author, Bianca Marais, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.